The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the Social Studio.
Thank you for downloading the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Trevor Down. This week, new inductees will be inducted into the Radio Academy Hall of Fame, and I've come to BBC London 94.9 to meet one of them, and she doesn't want to get too near because I've got a bit of a cold. Vanessa Phelps, hello, nice to see you anyway.
Hello, it's nice to see you, but it's not actually possible to cough or sneeze attractively on the radio. I have tried over the years to develop a technique, but actually any cough is unpleasant for the listener, and any cold, even your superior calibre of germs, I still do not wish to succumb to, so do not breathe on me or look at me.
I'm staying as far away as I can. Now, how many hours of broadcasting have you done today? It's now 12:05 on Tuesday the 2nd.
I've just done 4.5 hours plus this minute talking to you, so I'd say 4.5 hours plus 1 minute so far.
So you're a bit knackered then?
Bit knackered, yes, particularly because the Radio 2 show means I have to be at work at 4:30 in the morning. So I do, the Radio 2 show is on air from 5 till 6:30. Then I motor home as fast as I can on one wheel, skidding round corners, and then I come back again to work. So when I come back to do the second show and I get here about 8:10, everybody else is arriving at work for the first time that day and I'm arriving for the second time. Then we do a handover at about 8:30 and then the show goes from 9 till 12, but with no music, not really any guests, no advertising, an awful lot of me talking. I'd rather it were the listener and not so much of me, but it really does depend on the subject. Sometimes the listener takes the full burden, but often it's me. And so I've talked, you know, so much that even I'm thoroughly sick of it by the time I get to the end of it, and that is the truth.
Do you think that you have to have a slightly different personality when you're on Radio 2 nationally than when you're on BBC London just domestically for the capital audience?
I think my personality remains the same, but the mood is very different. So the first show, the show on Radio 2, is a nice, heartwarming, charming, I hope, diverting show to wake up to. Nobody wants to be faced with any horrible problems. Nobody wants to have a loud argument. There's no dissonance. There's no controversy. It's just a warm welcome to the day. And my personality at that time of day is warm and welcoming. But by the time I get here at 8:10, it's a completely different show. This is a show in which, obviously, we want lots of debate and lots of contribution from the listener. And I'm always acutely aware that the listener has a life and can do lots of other things that don't include phoning me and talking to me on the radio. So I have to engage the listener in the most kind of vivid and immediate way that I can. So I will be myself. I'll be exactly the same person. My personality hasn't changed, but my purpose has changed. So I'm doing a very different thing by the time I get here to BBC London.
So when you turn up at Radio 2, have you had any input in the music, or do you just see a pile of, as it were, tunes, or they're on the screen? I don't know how you do it. I'm presuming you don't play CDs in anymore. Do you just look at the list and think, this lot again? I mean, do you get involved in that, in the music side of it?
Well, I have a certain amount of involvement in the music, not a great deal, because obviously the Radio 2 music's very carefully calibrated by geniuses who do that kind of thing to appeal to the greatest number of people, ensure the greatest happiness of the greatest number in true Benthamite style. That's why so many people listen to it. So I wouldn't presume to go chopping in and changing this and changing that. But I have various items in the show which need music specific to them that day. So, for example, there's a throw-out subject every morning, and I choose, or maybe my producer or maybe the two of us in collaboration will choose an appropriate song to kind of exemplify that particular subject. So today it was about pocket money and how much you get and how much you were given as a kid and whether you had to work for it or not. And so I chose Dennis Brown and Money in My Pocket. So that was my choice of music. But I can sometimes choose something where we did something on, I don't know what it was, vegetables or something, and I chose Yes, We Have No Bananas. I mean, I will choose something as recondite and obscure as I possibly can.
That's a fruit, isn't it? It's not a vegetable.
Well, quite, but it was the closest I could get. But I didn't think that was too bad. Doesn't it mention an old-fashioned potato? I think it does
indeed,
along the way.
Yeah.
So yeah,
so
that was okay. And we did the Anthony Newley version and that was really quite good. So that song's got my stamp on it. On Fridays, I get to choose a Roaring Reggae Friday track of my own volition. So that's quite nice. And then another item that we have on the show is Today's Jolly Good Fellow. And Today's Jolly Good Fellow gets to hear the song that was number one on the day that they were born. So it can be absolutely anything. And if they predate the charts, it can be a song from, you know, whenever it was, the year that they were born, the most popular song of that year. So that makes the show sound a bit different. And then we have a grand finale theme tune on the subject of whatever it was we've been talking about, which is also going to be different from the normal playlist. So that's how I can influence it to make it sound a little different from the rest of the shows. But every presenter on Radio 2 will do that in some shape or form.
Now, when you get here to BBC London, as you say, you have to encourage conversation and debate, which means up to a point, you have to be a little bit contrarian, a little bit adversarial. It's your style. I was talking to Adrian Durham at TalkSport the other week about this, and he was saying that they don't have production meetings where they decide what view he, the presenter, is going to take. I wonder, do you do that?
Well, I work for the BBC, so I'm not meant to take any view at all. I'm supposed to be an objective conduit for everyone else's views. So I will be putting a variety of views. That's the way I do it. I'm going to, do you think this or do you think that? Is this the most appalling thing you've ever heard? Or actually, is this the great bonus and benefit? Are you appalled by this? Are you horrified? Particularly on matters political, which I obviously couldn't possibly have a view on because it's the BBC. If it's something about breastfeeding in public, I'm allowed to have a view and I will have a view and I'll punch it home as hard as I can. But I think my listeners would absolutely see through any kind of shock jockery. So I don't pretend to have a view that's more vehement than I really have. And I certainly don't soup it up in order to kind of capture the disgusted vote. I don't do that. I don't say, you know, all seeing eye dogs should be confiscated immediately and then get millions of court. I mean, I wouldn't do that because the listener would be disgusted and would know that I was faking it. So I don't do that.
What are the subjects that get people going? I remember in my days doing phone-ins, producing phone-ins, it's often quite disappointing, isn't it? Because you think of something that you think really needs to be debated, and actually it doesn't fly. But what does fly is, you know, dog shit on the pavements or something.
Never use that word at the BBC. I've always found that the most reliable subject ever, and this is giving away a trade secret acquired over many years of broadcasting, is pie. If you talk about the Proustian pie, the ancestral pie of your youth, the pie of which you take one bite, just one bite, and it evokes a host, a myriad of memories of whatever it is, just like Proust in La Recherche du Temps Perdu with the Madeleine, it's magnificent. There isn't one person who can't tell a story about pie. Their grandma's pie, some pie they've eaten, a pie they made, what they found in a pie. It's very good. But of course, it's a political and current affairs show, so my opportunity to discuss pie is sorely limited. But failing that, I mean, there are lots of hardy perennial London subjects that always go down well. But obviously, I don't get to select them at will and at random. I'm meant to be reflecting the news stories of the day. The awful thing is when either that it's a no news day, just nothing has happened, or because it's radio, we can react instantly to whatever's happened, so we can grab it as it happens. And then the next day, the paper are full of that, and you've done it. I've done it already. I can't do it again because I did it the day before, yet the papers have nothing else in them. And those are the days when you scrabble about the letters page or desperately look at the diary page or just hope that something has happened to you on the way home, like you've fallen down a pothole and you can talk about that. It's that kind of thing. But usually, I mean, the world is so peculiar and the stories in the paper so utterly bizarre that there's not really a shortage of things to discuss.
Take me back to the beginning. When I first met you, you were a writer.
You take me back to the beginning. You were there.
You were writing in the Jewish Chronicle, and but you'd written a book as well.
Oh, yeah,
that fascinated us. What was that called?
It was called What are these strawberries doing on my nipples? I need them for the fruit salad. But it wasn't, it was about sex, but it was about marital sex. It was about, you know, gosh, I've been seeking this person for all these years. How on earth am I meant to get excited about it? And also, you know, nobody ever tells the truth about their own sex life. What's everyone else really? How often is everyone doing it? What position are they doing it in? All that sort of stuff. Yeah, I was a journalist. I was just a jobbing journalist.
Like, were you keen on radio? Was radio something that you were passionate about?
I listened to it. Mm-hmm. I listened to it. My mother used to carry her radio from room to room and even put it in the car. On the front seat. So, I mean, I listened with Mother, I listened to Woman's Hour, I listened to William Hardcastle, I listened to The World at One, I listened to Petticoat Line, which I'm always talking about because I was only about four, but I thought it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And Nona Wynn, Bettine LeBeau, oh God, it was fantastic. Renee Houston, it was just brilliant. And so I've always loved radio. And when I was at university, I used to listen to radio all the time and been a big fan of it, but I never thought of being on it and I never knew how you could even be. I didn't know who to sleep with to get on it. No one. My father was in the underwear business, so I had no sort of influence or connection whatsoever with anyone in any form of media at all.
We were looking, weren't we, for a new presenter for what had been called You Don't Have to Be Jewish, and we decided that actually it was a programme where you kind of did have to be Jewish. And Gloria Abramoff, who then worked with us at GLR, suggested that she knew this bizarre journalist who'd written this weird book, and she introduced us.
I didn't know her. You were looking just for a guest. You were looking for a guest because I had written a column in the Jewish Chronicle. Actually, it wasn't a column. It was before I got a column. I'd written a piece as a journalist, which was about the Jewish mother is dead. And it was about the idea that the Jewish mother will, you know, close her own bedroom window so she doesn't use up all the fresh air so her child can have more fresh air, you know, will sit there all day breastfeeding the world and all of this. It's all over. Jewish mothers have become selfish and do nothing but play golf and, you know, have facelifts and this kind of thing. And I wrote this piece. I was asked to by the editor of the Jewish Chronicle. And it caused the most almighty furore. People were horrified. People were offended. They had to produce an article the following week by someone else saying, no, the Jewish mother is not dead. She's as selfless and saintly as ever she was, blah, blah, blah. And it caused such a ruckus that I was asked into what was then called Jewish London as a guest, just a guest. I wasn't a presenter. And it was the first time I'd ever been on radio in my entire life. I was very nervous. I remember I spent all day thinking about what I was going to say. I didn't get paid. I didn't get petrol or anything. I was married to a junior hospital doctor. I had two babies, you know, didn't have any money. But I still absolutely loved it. And I realised that I was one of the people, and there are some in the world, not many, who are funnier with a mic in front of them than they are in real life. I just kind of blossomed in front of it. And I said a whole lot of things that astounded myself. When I came, I thought, God, that was very funny. I said, I made a whole lot of jokes. I was extremely kind of passionate, and I was funny, and I was all sorts of things. And when I went home, I thought, well, I've been on radio once. I wonder if they'll ever ask me again. I wonder. And they did ask me again, unpaid. And I came back as a guest on numerous occasions. And each time I remember driving along the road, children in the back of the car thinking, right, I've been on radio 4 times. God, I've been on radio 7 times. I've been on the radio 11 times. Wow. And eventually, I mean, it took, I don't know, a year, maybe 2 years, they finally asked me to present the show. But it wasn't an overnight thing. And I only met Gloria Abramov after that. I mean, I met her because she worked at GLR and I was asked to come in and be a guest because of something I'd written. It wasn't the other way around.
Can you remember what we thought of changing the name of the show to?
No, because I don't suppose I would have been told as a guest.
I think so. We thought we might call it Jews Night.
Did you? That wasn't a bad idea. What I do remember, though, is when I took over as the presenter of Jewish London, it was absolutely hilarious because Jewish people didn't seem to get the concept of dressing for radio. So people would come and say, Vanessa, your guests are here. And people would come in and they always looked as if they were going to a bar mitzvah. People would come swanning in, you know, full evening gowns and tuxes and diamonds. And it was a wonderful show because you could have, you know, a Holocaust survivor. You could have a unicycling rabbi. You could have a link up with Jackie Mason who said, what, Jews in London? You've got Jews in London? What do you mean? You know, you could have a link up with a paper in Jerusalem. You could have all sorts of things. All sorts of amazing things happened on that programme. And it was the most fantastic training for anything that I've ever done since. It was phenomenal for the television show that I ended up presenting because it was every single guest had never done radio before. I didn't let on that the presenter also hadn't really ever done much radio before either. And so what you were trying to do was coax them to tell a story, sometimes a very emotional story, sometimes a very heartbreaking story. And you were trying to coax them to tell it without dominating it, without seeming to manipulate it, but, you know, just to get them to be as fluent as they could possibly be. And of course, when I ended up doing the Vanessa Show on the TV for all those years, that's exactly what it was. People who'd been through some terrible life crisis, who'd never been on telly, were totally intimidated. And I would be using everything that I'd learned on Jewish London to try and get them to tell the story.
I was going to ask you about the telly. Do you miss it?
I miss the profile of it. And I suppose I must be, if I'm honest, I miss the money of it because that was very nice. There's a combination of the two. But of course, profile has a plus side and a downside. I don't miss the nastiness of it. And actually, when I have ever gone back to TV, I had a show every day on Channel 5 in 2011, so not that long ago, called Vanessa. They're always called Vanessa, I don't know why. And I did keep thinking, God, if I had that guest on the radio, I wouldn't give them more than 30 seconds. But I'm stuck with this person for the whole of the first half of the show. Nightmare. So I think on radio, our tolerance for a naff guest is so much shorter than it is on the TV. And the TV is so prescribed. I mean, you're so much told where to stand, how to stand, what to say, what the questions are, when to throw to a break. Very, very different on the radio. And when you're used to a certain level of autonomy and also spontaneity, to be so scripted and so restricted is a bit of a pain. However, I like the money was great and I like the clothes, you know, and I like being back. People saying, oh, this is where you've been all these years. I'm like, oh my God, I'm on radio twice a day, every day. What do you mean, where have I been? But if people don't switch on that show, they're not aware of you. Whereas if you're on the telly, they're much more aware of you, much more sort of vividly. On the other hand, do I need a whole lot of people to be aware of me? At least I'm aware of myself. That's not such a bad thing.
How would you feel if you were asked to do a primetime show on Radio 2. I mean, there are people who say, well, of course, the only reason she's doing that sort of early breakfast show is because she wants to be part of the team so that when, for instance, Jeremy moves on or Simon moves on, you might be next in line. Is that how you see your next few years of career progression?
God, bring it on. As soon as they move on, the better. I do all the Jeremy Vine depths. And on a Monday, I'm always a bit nervous because it's always been so long since I lost it, because I'm only allowed to do 4 weeks a year because Dave Robey at BBC London 94.9 will only give me 4 weeks off to do it. Otherwise, I'd do all of them, which would be 9 weeks of Jeremy Vine a year, which I would like because I get to sleep later. And by the Monday, I'm always a bit nervous because, as I say, it's always been a few weeks since I've done it last. By the Tuesday, I'm really getting into my stride. By the Wednesday, I'm just hoping Hollywood will give him a major offer. I don't want anything bad to happen to him. I'd like something good to happen to him. But I'd like something good that would happen to him. He'd never come back and I could do his show. How do I feel? I'm ready. That's how I feel. Ready, willing. Simon Mayo, if someone wants to poach him, good for that. I wouldn't mind that show either. Both of them, yes. Anything, so I don't have to get up at that time of day any longer. But I've done 4 years of it, you know. It's a strain.
Congratulations on being inducted into the Hall of Fame. Does it mean anything to you?
Oh, gosh, it means the world to me. I'm absolutely delighted. I'm honoured. I'm thrilled to bits. And my kids are very, very pleased. And I've had congratulations from so many listeners who phoned in when it was announced on the news. I think it's nice for everyone. It's lovely for me, but I think it's also very nice for people who've been listening because it kind of makes them feel they were listening to something that was of decent quality and they're not the only people who think so. I think it's very nice for the bosses because they always think they were right to have chosen you and it kind of endorses them in having made that choice. But I just feel, let me live as long as Thursday, which is now 2 days away from now. Don't let me die before I get this award. I want to get it before I die. And then when I die in the obituary, if there is one anywhere in the Daily Star or somewhere like that, Women's Weekly, it'll say that I was inducted into the Radio Academy Hall of Fame. Which would be nice.
Vanessa, you don't mind if I give you some advice? Mm. Try and develop a bit more self-confidence.
I'll do my best.
Thanks very much indeed for your time today. That was Vanessa Feltz. This is the Radio Today programme. Let's have some news now from Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Thank you, Trevor. The BBC Trust this week has started a review of BBC Radio 4, 4 Extra, 5 Live and 5 Live Sports Extra. It's all part of the plan, though. It's all part of the big routine and details should be available next summer from the outcome. You can tweet them or email them with your contribution. Premier Christian Radio is now broadcasting on Eagle Extra's AM frequency in Surrey after Ofcom agreed a format change and UKRD agreed a price for the licence. And finally, UTV, or TalkSport Limited, is facing competition for its Wolverhampton licence, which operates as Signal 107. A new company called Omni Radio has expressed an interest. Watch this space. That's the very latest this week from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
Radio Moment.
We start this week looking back 2 years, and BBC Radio News programmes moved from TV Centre. Programmes like The World Tonight, World at One and PM would no longer emanate from the famous Studio S1.
The first memory I have is of the very first programme I ever broadcast from here. It was brand new. I think we were the first Radio 4 programme to move in, and I had the great delight of broadcasting an entire programme with Radio 2 in my headphones.
On 88 to 91 FM.
Frightening thing, when I first sat down here, my first day, I was quite worried about reading the headlines because you've got to fit them in around the pips, which, as listeners will know, we do with varying degrees of success. So I was quite nervous about doing that. And I'd got to the headlines and John Humphreys got up and walked out. I thought I'd said something to upset him.
Memories of TV Centre before the move to a new broadcasting house 2 years ago. On the South Coast this week, 26 years ago, a clever use of an adjacent FM frequency in common ownership as Ocean FM got a powerful sister.
Sunday, December the 4th, 1988, at exactly 10 a.m.
Power, power, FM.
Give me a beat.
The power is on.
The launch of Power FM on the South Coast this week in 88. Another offshoot began this week 28 years ago.
Hello, welcome to the new lively, brighter sound of Northants 96, coming to you from the heart of Northamptonshire, providing you with a new radio service that you can really enjoy.
I like listening to local news, as long as it doesn't get too boring. There's local travel to find out what's going on and how the motorway is.
I love local radio.
We'll reflect the lifestyle of the county, keep you entertained and keep you on the move. County Council Leader for Northamptonshire is Bill Morton.
The fact that we've got the M1 transmitted through the middle of the county, many people pick up the local radio when they're going through Northamptonshire. And I think anything...
The launch of Northants 96 this week in 86, taking over from Hereward Radio, now Hart. And let's hope the news never got too boring. Roger Moffat died this week in 86. Roger played a huge role in the early days at Hallam and was famously the last voice on the BBC Light programme.
Well, there we end broadcasting in the Light programme, not just for today, but as it seems, forever. The Light programme, that is, as it's known now, is closing down. But in only a few hours' time, the BBC with Paul Hollingdale will open up on 247 metres and 1500 metres and VHF. That's at 5:30. And then at 7 o'clock on 247 metres, Tony Blackburn will open and swing into our new Radio 1 network.
And now, with the time at 1 o'clock, we come to the end of broadcasting from Radio Hallam for today. We shall be back on the air again at 5 minutes to 5 with the early morning news. So, on behalf of all of us here at Radio Hallam in Sheffield, may we wish you all a very good night.
Farewell, Roger Moffat, this week 28 years ago. If only we had close downs like that now. If only we ever closed down. 50 years ago this week saw the first tentative test transmissions for a station which was to be the template, eventually, for Radio 1.
Now reminds me to remind you that you're tuned to Wonderful Radio London with the clock reading 20 and one half minutes past 6 o'clock. And, oh, come in, do. And, yes, another new record now. This one by a group that I haven't heard much about before, the Riot Squad.
Early moments in the life of the pirate Radio London, which began its test transmissions from the North Sea this week in 1964. It was very nearly named after its ship, and had it been, it would have been the very first Galaxy. The lives of some stations are even shorter than Radio London's 3 years. This one lasted just 6 months.
As the great man said, "This is my truth, tell me yours." Let this music speed through the geography, crisscross the rain-ravaged rivers and wild winds of our tiny, massive country. This is a liberation transmission. This music welcomes all skins.
The incredible start to XFM South Wales this week in 2007. It lasted just 6 months before becoming Nation Radio. Happy birthday this week to this chap, a broadcaster whose naughtiness goes back many years.
I seem to have come through a few nuclear winters, but I loved those schools, and I think that actually they were a very important part of defining my character. That I have a sense of mischievousness about me. I probably am a bit naughty. And I think in a way, there's certain points in my life and career where that has led me towards disaster. But I think in other ways it served me well, and particularly in the job that I do now. I think it's helped me not be too bland, almost, really.
Richard Bacon, happy 39th birthday. So, with Absolute 70s launching this week 3 years ago...
A radio station all about that is only a good thing.
The complete separation of Radio 1 and 2 32 years ago...
6 o'clock on Radios 1 and 2.
And Harriet Scott leaving Hart 2 years ago...
Here's Robbie, it's 6:08.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments.
More great stuff from David Lloyd. Don't forget that whatever happens to the Radio Academy podcast, you'll always be able to hear those radio moments right here. Meanwhile, good luck to the Academy and to all its new inductees at this week's Hall of Fame lunch. Alan Brazil, Nikki Campbell, Barry Cryer, Trevor Nelson, Pete Price, Joe Wiley, and of course this week's Radio Today programme guest, Vanessa Feltz. This has been a TDC production. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next time.
The Radio Today programme with broadcast by Onyx.